This is London Calling.
You are listening to Thought and Leaders.
Hello, 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 and welcome again to another global podcast that is Thought and Leaders. As you know, I scour this beautiful, magnificent planet of ours to find the most insightful, most intriguing, the most, especially this week, inspiring leaders out there. We have the incredible Johnny Benjamin, MBE. Hello, Johnny.
Hello. Hi. Hi.
Johnny, can I open today with something that's bothering me?
Yeah.
Everyone's talking about the pandemic. There is another pandemic, isn't there, Johnny, which is to do with mental health?
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. Everyone's obviously focusing on, you know, physical health, getting back to some sort of normality and, you know, COVID restrictions that will affect us physically. But no one is talking about the mental health impact.
Yeah.
As we all know, that the longer that we don't talk about something, the longer we suppress something, it's just going to get worse.
Yeah. The Institute for Fiscal Studies and the Resolution Foundation were saying in a report that there are huge challenges facing millions in their late teens and early 20s from a mental health point of view, because they are thinking, am I ever going to get a job? I mean, it used to be, Johnny, that they were worried about, will I ever get a home of my own? Now we've got, will I ever get a home of my own? And will I ever get a proper paid job?
Yep. Yep, absolutely. Those pressures are increased by the technology that we have, the social media that we have, this kind of comparison thing that lots of young people, well, not just young people, all of us do on social media. You know, we see that person, we think they're successful on Instagram, they're traveling around the world, you know, they're working really hard, they've got this relationship. Social media gives a false reality to people. I mean, I'm not saying all social media is bad, I'm not saying that, but we're just constantly judging ourselves against our peers. And really, that only serves to worsen our mental health ultimately.
In terms of mental health in the United Kingdom, I wrote a piece for an amazing guy called Steve Phillip. His son committed suicide. I was discussing in that piece what it's like to try and reach out for mental health support. Mm-hmm. You've got people telling you that you're going to be waiting 18, 24 months just for psychotherapy or something.
We've got a service which is like one size fits all. For some people, just psychotherapy won't work. If someone has something like trauma, PTSD, you know, they might need a specific type of therapy, something like what we call EDMR, which is known to be very, very successful when it comes to trauma, to PTSD. But unfortunately, you know, we're limited on the variation of services that we have to offer people.
Yeah.
So that's another problem. On top of the waiting list, you might eventually get seen, but if the treatment's not right for you, then what's the point, you know?
But by the time you were 20 years old, you were diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder, which is a combination for listeners of schizophrenia and bipolar. The thing that got to me, Johnny, was that you were saying earlier intervention would have meant that things would have been very different for you.
When I was growing up, we had nothing in school, nothing. Not once did anyone talk about mental health at all. When I went to university, you know, we had nothing.
Yeah.
We had lots of lectures on safety in your halls of residence, you know, security, being aware of, you know, who's around you. But again, no one ever talked about mental health. No one ever said, it's okay if you are struggling and here's where to go. Half the problem is when someone is ready to finally talk about their mental health, they just don't know where to start. And if one service isn't available to you, then where do I go now? And often GPs don't know always where to signpost people to if there's long waiting lists. So there's real issues, I think, in terms of, you know, being able to, well, A, speak up, but to access good support, particularly for young people.
I don't know what the impact on your physical and mental health of all the pressure that you clearly feel under.
Thank you for asking, because not many people have asked if I'm okay, but it's a very real thing to be going through behind the scenes.
And the answer is, would it be fair to say not really okay, as in it's really been a struggle?
Yes.
You get a lot of celebs and influencers who say, you know, it's okay to not be okay and it's good to reach out. But between you and me, Johnny,
yeah,
the reality is that you will reach out because the resources are so poor, you won't necessarily get a helping hand back, or the helping hand back that you get is only going to just about hold on to your fingers and then you'll slip away because they're just overwhelmed. So what's the point of saying reach out?
Well, this is it. And this is where, you know, charities step in. The third sector organization steps in. There's so many incredible mental health well-being organizations and charities out there that don't get enough praise, that don't get enough funding, because they're the ones that often have to step in, plug the gaps in the mental health system. But even then, they can't cope. I speak to so many charities that have got, again, such long waiting lists, and it's becoming an increasing problem.
And it's not fair on them either.
No.
You get to the point, what can you do? You could ring up a crisis line, I guess, and they would tell you to take a glass of water or take a deep breath or distract yourself. But, you know, there's only so many times you can take a glass of water and take a deep breath. Another thing you could do, I suppose, is go to A&E, and all they can do in A&E is either, I don't know, get you to go to a local mental health center. You might not get in there because there won't be enough beds and they can't cope anyway, so forget that idea. Or you might not actually need something as bad as that. So you go back outside and it all starts again, and you're just going round and round and round and round and round in circles. Again, I don't think it's the fault of these professionals, and it's certainly not the fault of amazing charities like yours, and we will get to your charity a bit later, but what is someone supposed to do, Johnny?
If you've got people around you, if you've got family, if you've got friends around you, I think it makes a difference. Well, hopefully it makes a difference. But obviously, you know, some people, not everyone has those family, those friends around them.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. And it's really, really tough. There are some incredible charities that will provide things like long-term support, because someone has, well, whatever illness it is, you know, they'll often need more than just 6 sessions of therapy, which is usually what's given to people.
Yeah, yeah.
There's some great organizations like Rethink and like Mind. They've got hubs all over the UK. And they'll offer you long-term support, not just 6 sessions. And it will be different sorts of support. You know, maybe it's something like creative therapy, or maybe it's actually a support group with other people. They try and actually at least find you something that is going to be long-term, be enduring, and not just a kind of, yeah, 6 sessions, then you're done, then you're out.
Even a fantastic, amazing place, you know, like Marjorie Wallace's Mind and places like that. It's not Marjorie's fault, but, you know, they can't cope.
They really can't. They really can't. And also, some of these services are really designed for adults.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah.
For young people, I mean, there are, don't get me wrong, again, there's some incredible youth mental health charities, organizations. We fund some of them. But bigger charities like Mind, like Sane, like Rethink, mostly focus on the adult population.
What do you think about the suggestion by some people out there that the young generation is basically too snowflakey, and that they, you know, this mental health issue.
Yeah, sure.
It's always been there, but in the past, people just said, get on with it. And I'm not talking about something which is like schizophrenia or something like that, or bipolar, where you need to literally take some pills and stuff. What do you say to people like that who suggest that this generation is just not strong enough?
Well, you know, I'd say amongst men in the UK, the suicide rate has not changed. I mean, it's changed very slightly, but it's not really changed for decades. It's literally been stuck for decades. And unfortunately, lots of young men and increasingly young women are taking their own lives. The statistic we often talk about is there's 200 school children, unfortunately, take their own lives every single year.
My God.
It's so tragic, but, you know, particularly, I think, suicide. And so anyone that says, you know, oh, children need to be more resilient or stop being a snowflake, I say to them, well, you know, look at this statistic. And that's the people that, the young people that complete suicide. There's many more young people that are attempting suicide. It's a real worrying thing. I mean, I'd say to those people, you know, talk to the families, talk to the teachers that are actually seeing this happen in front of their eyes. Mental health issues are becoming more complex. I think, again, social media and technology, the way that we live our lives, is just adding to that. You know, we live in a 24/7 nonstop world, particularly for young people. You know, they're given these tools, these phones, and they're not given any guidance of how to use them. I mean, it's like someone said to me, when a young person turns 17, they're given keys to a car, but they are given guidance and instruction. And, you know, we teach young people about road safety, but there's nothing around that when it comes to technology. And, you know, I actually say it's the adults that need to really think about what they're doing.
Hold on. So you're saying it's the adults' fault that they've given the young people the web and smartphones and all that stuff?
We know that people in Silicon Valley, for example, they don't give phones to their children. They make the platforms addictive. We all know that, you know, Twitter, Facebook, you know, you get endorphin hits every time someone likes your photo, and then you therefore have got to keep getting those likes on your photo. You've got to keep posting. You want those endorphin hits.
Everything is going into gamification. I've got to win more likes, as you were saying, and stuff like that.
Mm.
On social media, you do get these sites, especially for young women, yeah, for teenagers, they goad each other into doing more and more drastic things.
Mm.
And the final dare is kill yourself. That isn't a game, but it has become a gamification.
And no one wants to take responsibility. We do a lot of work with schools, and schools say to us, it's not our problem, it's the family's problem. They need to deal with it at the home. And the parents are saying, well, actually, it's the schools. And no one wants to take responsibility.
Yeah.
To young people, they say to us, well, you know, the adults just say, just stop. Just don't be on it. Just stop using it. You can't just say to a young person, just stop using your phone. It's not going to work. You know, again, we need to help guide them and help give them the right kind of tools of how to deal with these situations where someone might be goading you and you feel you have to kind of go with it. And again, no one is talking to these young people about the consequences, the risks, how to actually manage it. We're just giving young people these things and just then blaming them when, you know, things go wrong. And it's just not the right attitude. Let's have a dialogue about it. You know, let's actually try and deal with this.
Mm.
So the problem is getting worse. It's been exacerbated by the pandemic and, you know, young people being at home and using their phones, the technology more and more and more. And again, no one kind of helping them with it. You know, I know plenty of adults that are addicted to their phones and you see it all the time. I mean, and you know, again, that's setting an example to your children. You know, I see plenty of times adults on their phones in a restaurant or in a pub or wherever, and the kids are obviously on their phones too.
It's nonstop, yeah.
You know, we follow our parents.
Specialist speakers make your next event
fascinating,
authentic, entertaining,
insightful,
refreshingly honest,
totally compelling.
Contact specialistspeakers.com.
So it's really about education, isn't it?
I mean, it's really hard, unfortunately, to get that education into schools, into the curriculum, because the curriculum is so jam-packed with, you know, the academic side of things. When we go into schools and try and do something around mental health, you know, often we'll be told, well, we don't have time. I mean, yes, there's PSHE, the kind of, which is meant to introduce different things to young people, but already that's got its own sort of curriculum and things need to be introduced into that. So things like, you know, guidance around technology, around social media, it's not in there anywhere in the kind of curriculum, in our studies. It really does need to be.
surely this is not the job of the teachers, this is the job of the parents to educate these people. Because, I mean, the teachers are being asked to do so many things. They're being asked to look at LGBTQT and all that stuff, and they're asked about Black Lives Matter. Now you've got a thing about mental health. You're going to have so many things, Johnny, that history and math, well, they'll have to take second place.
I agree. And you can't expect teachers to be mental health consultants or psychiatrists or whatever, mental health nurses, whatever you want to call it. We can't expect them to do that. And so we need to bring people into schools from outside. And we're trying to link up schools to their local provision because, again, people just don't know where to go. Schools don't know where to go for mental health guidance or support. So by linking up people, you know, that are local to them, it kind of helps. But I completely agree. Yeah, teachers are overwhelmed. Been a really stressful year, and they're expected now to do this academic catch up, and all the people coming back, all the young people are at different stages. You know, some people learned well during the pandemic, the lockdowns. Some people just stopped learning during the lockdowns, or their learning kind of declined. So everyone's at a different stage when they come back to class, and teachers are just expected to catch everyone up at the same time. And it's a really tough job, and no one is actually taking care of the teachers' well-being. That's what we're seeing.
It's very much in vogue at the moment for companies, from a corporate social responsibility point of view, to encourage mental health workers, if you see what I mean. You know, people who are going to be, they used to be first aid workers, and now there's mental health workers. Again, the problem, Johnny, is that these poor guys, they will be told to speak to people, to listen, the importance of listening. And ultimately, I guess they'll be told and where to direct people to. But here comes the tangled knot. They're going to direct people to where we started our conversation, which is a system that can't cope.
Really responsible companies will have their own services, what we call the, you know, the EAP, the Employee Assistance Program. All companies should have, well, private counselors or whatever type of therapist that someone needs that the company pays for. They won't be expected to go to the NHS. The company should be able to provide whatever it is, the counseling, the psychotherapy for the member of staff. And in some companies, I've seen that they're extending that to members of the employee's family, which is great. So again, instead of that employee's family member having to go to the NHS mental health services, they can actually get support via the workplace, which is really interesting. Companies need to put money into this.
It seems to be that we're going into an era of 0 hours contracts. And that world, Johnny, of 0 hours contract is making these people iller.
Yeah.
Are we going to be like some bad film on Prime Video about the future is so awful that everyone is like out for themselves, survival of the fittest?
I know. Look, I'm really concerned about, you know, things like levels of stress, levels of anxiety, actually, in particular, levels of depression. We've definitely seen an increase in all of that. For the government, you know, in their ideal world, everything will just, get back to normal. And that includes people's kind of well-being after the last year and a half. But there's a lot of confusion, uncertainty, and ultimately that leads to a lot of anxiety.
Now, I know that you've worked with someone who we've interviewed on Thought and Leaders, which is Alistair Campbell. Great guy.
Great guy, yeah.
Alistair tells me it's a lot of different messages all over the place. From a trusting point of view, no one knows who to trust. But from a mental health point of view, Johnny, what I really worry about, and speaking to you and speaking to people like Alistair, is that it's getting to the point that do we even trust ourselves?
I know. It's a tricky one. There's so much out there. Again, social media, I'd say there's just too much information. I mean, I've come off to now.
Have you really?
Yeah, no, I came off.
But why did you come off it?
There's a real problem on that platform with, well, things like anti-Semitism. You know, I'm from a Jewish background.
Mazel tov, yeah.
I've always tried to highlight the problem of anti-Semitism on particularly Twitter. And Twitter just do not want to know. In the last few months, obviously with the kind of conflict in the Middle East, people think about Hitler. Hitler was right. Lots of kind of similar, I can't even repeat some of the things that were said. And Twitter just do not take action. Maybe they will suspend that person for a week, but then they'll be allowed back. I just don't think enough is being done at all. not just anti-Semitism, there's lots of, I mean, homophobia, for example, is a massive problem as well. And I've met with Twitter a number of times over this. And, you know, they've told me the same thing over and over, that we really care about people's kind of safety. This is no place for hate. But look at what happened with Trump. Whatever you think of him, the riots that we saw, I believe that did come from Twitter. You know, he was calling on people from his Twitter account, and that's why he was banned. But it was too late. It was too late. They banned people too late, and they need to take action earlier, but they don't.
You're talking about Trump with what happened in the White House. Do you think that we're getting angrier?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of anger. There's a lot of anger, for sure. I mean, look at the last year that we've had in particular.
Are you blaming everything on COVID?
Of course not. I think because of this world of technology and particularly social media, we see what everyone else is up to and we compare ourselves to everyone else. And, you know, levels of dissatisfaction, I think, are increasing so much because we are constantly judging ourselves against other people. I think it's making us angrier. A lot of people I know have lost trust in, you know, the government, politicians. I mean, there's been so much over the years. There was so much division. I think Brexit as well caused so much division in this country. And so I think people are angrier, more intolerant of each other. It's not just COVID, obviously.
Looking at the news feeds that ping me every 15 minutes, to tell me that another young person in a place like London has stabbed someone. Now, I don't think that young person gives a toss about Brexit and the policies and that stuff. So why is it that young people are stabbing each other? Because this is a mental health issue, surely.
Our education system really doesn't suit everyone, because if someone doesn't fit in, if someone isn't keeping up, you know, academically, and maybe they're misbehaving, you know, instead of maybe looking at what's underneath the root cause, because, you know, league tables, you know, schools need to look good for the Ofsted inspectors. People are just excluded from schools very quickly if they don't fit in, if they misbehave. And then we all know what happens if someone is excluded from school and they don't get any kind of new opportunities, and they're left to kind of just sort of fester and then join up with other people in the same boat, and gangs are formed. You've got 30 students in a class, and if someone is falling behind, if someone is misbehaving, that teacher can't be expected to then dedicate their time to that individual. And then that individual is completely left behind and, as I said, gets excluded and then falls into a gang, and then that's it.
Are you saying that all the stuff that everyone has been putting out on social media, on the news, on TV, about that we are going to be a kinder society, it's just a lot of baloney?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, for sure, 100%. And not everyone, maybe. And all the companies jumped on the bandwagon and said, you know, we really care about pride and we've got our rainbow flag. And then, you know, it comes to July, but it's the same with Mental Health Week. In May every year, we have Mental Health Week. There's a huge, like, kind of fanfare about it. And then, you know, I speak to people in companies that say, our company doesn't give a toss. They make us work overtime. They don't care. There's so much of this be kind, or we care about mental health, or Black Lives Matter. People will say these things just to look good, just particularly if they're organizations. You know, they have to look good. They have to appear like they're doing something. Behind the scenes, you know, what's really going on?
Yeah.
We only get, again, social media gives us such a false impression of people, of organizations. Yeah, what's going on behind the scenes is a very different story.
What are we going to do about it, though?
Well, I think we need to be more real and honest. Do you know, I really face it when schools or organizations, companies come to me and say, look, we're struggling and we don't know what to do. And, you know, we've made mistakes. I think that's important to be honest and real, and not put this whole kind of like fanfare, like, yeah, we're doing a lot about mental health, or we really care about LGBTQ plus people. Politicians do it all the time. Look, the government have cut so much over the last decade. They've taken away much more than they're putting in. Let's be real. Let's be honest. And I think that's what, again, you know, causes people to be angry. There's so many people within the mental health space that I know are really angry because they're not being heard, and their calls for funding are not being met. You know, we've been asking for years for mental health funding to be ring-fenced so that commissioners can't spend it elsewhere, but it's still not ring-fenced.
Since 2010, there's been a 25% reduction in terms of the NHS of mental health beds.
Exactly.
And I know our esteemed leader is very keen that we all go back to work. And by the time this is going out, we would have gone back to work and we would have all started to experience the Johnson variant. And when, but, you know, he's saying go back to work, get the economy going, because the fact is, Johnny, we're broke. The country's broke.
Yeah.
Not a lot anyone can do.
Boris Johnson, he's so good at kind of, covering up and not being honest.
Johnny, look around the world, right? Look at history. Yes, you're going to get the occasional politician, leader, who is absolutely in it for the right reason. But, you know, power corrupts absolutely, and absolute power corrupts. Mm. So, you know.
But if you look at New Zealand, for example, and Jacinda is so highly regarded now around the world.
Yeah.
You know, she leads with integrity, truth. I wish we had more leaders that were prepared to have that integrity and that compassion and be honest. Just be honest. And if you make mistakes, fine, you've made a mistake, hold your hands up, but don't,
yeah,
you know what, like Dominic Cummings, for example, in that press conference, I mean, the way that he kind of cover up, he would not admit that he was wrong at all, and it was cringing.
Other people were also covering up,
and as you say, though, throughout history there's been so many cover-ups and, you know, so many dodgy politicians and people in power. We know that, but it doesn't work. We know it doesn't work. Whereas if you look at, again, New Zealand and someone like Jacinda.
Right.
She's a role model, someone for young people, I think, to look up to. I don't know many young people that say they look up to our current politicians like Boris Johnson. I'm sorry, but I don't know many young people that would aspire to be Johnson. But someone like Jacinda, I know that young people, young women, young girls would aspire to be someone like her.
Tell you who is making a difference, and that's Johnny Benjamin. Tell us about your charity.
Youth Mental Health Charity. You know, we set it up as a grant-giving organisation because, as we've said, you know, the funding throughout mental health is just so poor. And we said, well, you know, why don't we be the people that help give funding? So, you know, we go to corporates, you know, big banks, and we say, these small local mental health charities, they need funding. Come on, you know, open your wallets. We're basically giving money directly to schools now because schools are desperate.
Yeah.
And we give money directly to local mental health charities so they can do great work with young people. And we really look at funding things that are maybe non-traditional.
Like what?
Well, you know, for some people, traditional forms of therapy don't work where you sit opposite your counselor, psychiatrist. There's still that stigma, particularly for, you know, young men. They don't want to go and to see someone and talk.
Yeah, I get that.
So something like, you know, creative types of therapy or sport therapy. You know, there's something now, dynamic running therapy, which is where you run alongside your therapist, and it's becoming very popular, actually.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it's great. I don't mean to criticize too much, but, you know, within the NHS, within the mental health system, they have to stick to their kind of traditional, the successions of therapy that you're going to get, and this is the model we need to follow. And although I will say that, you know, in some mental health trusts, they are looking outside the box. They're bringing over therapies from Scandinavia, which is something called the open dialogue therapy, for instance. They're bringing over and trialing it.
It's like an intervention.
Yeah, it's like you involve everyone around you. So your friends, even your friends come and they talk about, well, how can we help that person? And the family will come and say, well, what can we do? How can we help that person?
Mm.
Often people need, you know, they need a holistic mental health treatment, which is what we don't often get here. And again, that's why we fund organizations that will maybe offer a bit more holistic kind of treatment. When it comes to other illnesses such as, I don't know, cancer, my dad was diagnosed with prostate cancer a few years ago.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, no, thankfully he's doing okay, thank you. He was given a choice of different kind of therapies and like radiotherapy, and there was this laser, you can have an operation. There's not the same for mental health. You know, people are just given, as I say, this one size fits all model, which just doesn't work for everyone. Antidepressants, you know, I mean, that's the whole other thing, is medication. You know, some medications will work for some won't work for others. I mean, it's very, mental health is so complex, as is obviously any physical health issue, but we don't treat it in that way.
I want to go back to the banks. Does it kind of bother you sometimes, Johnny, that you're going to these banks and telling them to open up their wallets and they're thinking to themselves, okay, I'll get involved with this. It would be good for my image.
We want them to get involved, you know, maybe mentoring. So, you know, some of the people on our youth board have been through quite serious mental health challenges. They had to drop out of school. They're worried about getting into the workplace. So what can these organizations do, like things like mentoring or giving them opportunities, not just the money? Because you're right, it shouldn't just be about their image and making them look good.
Yeah,
you know, they can lend their skill. There's so many young people out there who are in need of some sort of help or guidance.
One of the people I was fortunate enough to interview on Thought and Leaders is a lady called Linda Cruz. She decided, by the way, Johnny, later in life, to put everything she owns into one suitcase, go off around the world and help people.
Gosh, that's incredible.
Yeah, she's incredible.
Wow.
And I spoke to her when she was in Dubai at the time. She said that she says to people, don't give me money, give me solutions. She gets companies to kind of come up with think tanks of how to solve a specific project. So it could be something to do with a tornado or a tsunami or whatever it might be. And that's how she does it. So is that the way forward, to get them to not just dig in their pockets, but actually reach into their minds?
So yeah, in the long term, for sure. You know, when, like, we spoke to one school who dozens of their pupils have ended up in a psychiatric hospital in the last few months. They've referred about, what was it, 45 people onto CAMHS, the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Service, which has a waiting list of 18 months. And so they desperately need people to come into their school now, you know, counselors, psychotherapists. So we're paying for that. We're giving them a grant so they can bring people in. But, you know, that's just one school out of thousands and thousands and thousands of schools and colleges and universities all around the country. So yes, you know, long term we need plans, of course, but in the meantime, we do need funding. I know it's not all about funding, but we need funding to bring in support now, because, you know, as I said earlier on, the longer that we leave this, the worse it's going to get. The more we talk about early intervention. Early intervention is key. It is, and it's not just mental health. It's the same for physical health. You know, an early diagnosis in whatever it is, it makes a difference, right? But in mental health, it's so often that people have to reach a crisis before they finally get help, if they get help. But if we're able to intervene early,
sometimes it's too late, and that is the tragic thing, isn't it?
It's tragic, and we hear those stories all the time. It is too late. But this is what I'm saying. This is why early intervention is so important. But I just don't think society is there yet in terms, or even, you know, the preventative side. We don't focus on the preventative side. I just feel like society hasn't got there yet. We're not woken up to that yet.
What can people do right now? Let's get you some support. What can we do?
Reach out to family, friends, particularly maybe if there's someone that you haven't heard from for a while. You know, there's a lot of people I know at the moment that are struggling. Maybe they're struggling with their mental health, maybe financially, maybe, you know, they've lost their job over the pandemic and it's been a tough time. And honestly, just reaching out and just sending a message or just having a little phone call, it really can make, you know, you think, oh, nah, that person, they're fine. They've got family, or they've got their own friends, or I don't know, you know, I don't need to worry about them. They'll be fine. But actually, you know, just like anyone can be struck down at any time with a physical health issue, anyone can be struck down with a mental health issue. It's not, people aren't immune to it. On our website, you know, the website wearebeyond.org.uk, you can find out all the things that we're doing, the grants, the mental health festivals that we're running, the events for schools and for teachers. And, you know, please get involved. Maybe if you've got something to give. I mean, I mentioned mentoring. Some of our youth boards would love to be, you know, mentored or given opportunities. Again, it doesn't have to be just money. That's the thing. Any skills, any resources, we're really welcome.
So that's that. Could you just repeat the website again so people can have a look?
So wearebeyond.org.uk.
Brilliant. There's a Japanese proverb that I know that you're quite familiar with, Johnny. You know what I'm going to say.
Yes.
So there's a Japanese proverb, which is fall down seven times, stand up eight. Wow. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's what it's about. It's keep going, isn't it?
It really is. There's another quote that I really love, which is the human spirit is stronger than anything that can happen to it.
Whoa. Yeah.
And yeah, I love that. And it's true. We are so resilient as human beings. And again, the last year, I think, has proven how resilient we all are.
Absolutely.
It's been such a tough time for so many people. We are so resilient, but we don't give ourselves enough credit, I think, as human beings.
Yeah.
You only realize that when you come out of unfortunately, you have to go through adversity and come out the other side to then realize, oh, gosh, I overcame that. You know, I'm actually not that. I thought I was very weak, but actually, you know, I'm strong.
Yeah. Everyone out there around our beautiful globe, celebrate each other. Listen to each other. Reach out to each other if you can help with Johnny Benjamin's amazing initiatives, then do so. His book is called The Book of Hope, and what a great way to end our chat on that idea of hope.
Absolutely.
That's what we want.
Absolutely.
My background is in branding, and everyone thinks that someone in branding will look after it. Well, sometimes in life, people out there, we need ourselves to look after ourselves, our own family of the world.
Absolutely, 100%, 100%.
So you can do it. Take the lead from this amazing leader, Johnny Benjamin, MBE. Thank you again for being on the show today.
Pleasure, such a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
To everyone else, until next time, look after yourself, look after your mental health, and be strong.
Wow. Brilliant.
When no one else can understand me, when everything I do is wrong, you give me hope and consolation. You give me strength to carry on, and you're always there to lend a hand.
Thought and Leaders is a Goodbye production. It is heard around the world, but we can't continue broadcasting without your support. If you are interested in sponsoring the show or are looking for award-winning content, including strategy and coaching, please DM us or email reinvent@me.com. That's reinvent@me.com.
The world is brighter. You touch my hand and I'm a king. Your kiss to me is worth a fortune.